That's right. It's going to be an interesting afternoon this afternoon. Marianne Lenti is in the building, and she has really, really, I guess we could say, perfected the art, the artist in you. You just keep, when you first came on several, it's been several years since you've
been
here.
Yeah, that long. Okay, whatever you say, you're the boss.
And you have really expanded. You have developed principles here. You've had grandchildren since I last saw you.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to go to Chicago, and I used to go to the Art Institute, and then shopping to Nordstrom's.
Yes.
And now we go to Chicago, and all I do is Mao. Our grandchild, Mao Lenti. So we hold Mao and keep Mao from falling down the concrete steps, and we chase Mao, and I have not seen the Art Institute in about 2 years now.
You know, and you have, don't you have another grandchild?
Another grandchild, Victor, is in Seattle.
Right.
I don't know. Well, there's a nice Chilhuli gallery in Seattle, the glass guy.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to go to galleries together, but that's gone out the window, too. That's, and then we do Victor.
We feed
Victor, we change Victor. I don't know how the new diapers work, so I usually have to change him 3 or 4 times before I get the Velcro doing the right way. I'm not very good at it, really. And the last time, my daughter-in-law was standing there looking over my shoulder while I was changing Victor, and she said, "Are you right-handed?" And I said, "Why?" She said, "You're not have the baby facing the right way to do this." So, that's, I'm learning.
So I have, you painted the diaper and everything was okay after that.
I should have. I don't even bother bringing my paints. If you knew Victor, you'd know why.
Okay. You don't put arrows on it like this way.
You know, they're just Pampers. It should be
easy on, simple.
and obvious, not to me.
Not to you.
No.
Your diaper challenge?
I put them on backwards, I've been told.
Okay. Well, you dressed yourself well today, Mary.
Thank you so much, Anne.
And your hair looks wonderful for the radio today.
Thank you. I actually washed it this morning because I knew I was going to be on the air.
Yes. So so being a grandparent has been a great experience, I guess, here too.
Yes. And both boys have my art in the baby's room. So that's really nice.
Yeah.
I've sent them art. John has a spirit tree in the corner, and a abstract that I did some time ago in the baby's room has all sorts of colors in it. And Joey just got a painting in the mail of my trees, of spirit trees, that he got to pick out by himself. So that's going in the baby's room in Chicago.
You know, that is so neat, and I think it is so neat to have been able to have found a different direction. You were so tunnel-visioned with piano.
Totally.
Yes.
There's no other way to play the piano than be tunnel-visioned with it. I mean, you know, Michael Phelps, he does swimming. He's got tunnel vision, too.
Yes.
You know,
19 gold medals.
Oh. You put him in the water, and he does his thing. You know,
right.
Me, you put me at the piano, I did my thing, but you know, all the rest of the time that you're not actually doing the thing, you're practicing.
That's true.
So I'm practicing has been part of my vocabulary. Marianne, would you like to go shopping? Well, I can't, I'm practicing. Marianne, you want to go play tennis? No, I can't, I'm practicing.
Well, what a freeing experience this has been then, yes?
You have no idea.
You
have an idea.
I think I do, yes.
It was so amazing. And at the same time that I was doing less performing, and that was mainly because of migraines,
mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I was finding it more difficult to fulfill the performing end of things. That's when art kind of presented itself to me. I had always drawn. I've got paintings by both of my uncles in our house. I grew up with the smell of turpentine all around me, so painting was kind of there in my background, but I had never explored it, and it took Skip Shelton to put a paintbrush in my hand and have me try color. I'm so used to black and white, you know, the keys. And white keys, black keys, and your music is basically a black tone on white tone. All the printing is done that way. So it's a very black and white world, and all of a sudden to think about brilliant yellow green or vibrant purple or aqua teal, or lamp.
Any of the shades in between that, even. Yes.
And all the shades in between that. And then you have the possibilities of taking that shade and mixing it with another shade. Like, you know, what if I put a little gold paint in here and see what that does? I try everything. I'm really quite adventurous.
Well, that doesn't actually surprise me that you're adventurous, Mary. I think that you probably just need to be, you needed to be unleashed or unhinged. Which word would it be?
Unhinged is probably more.
More like it.
Well, the piano does have a large hinge on it.
Yes, it does.
That's how you open it up. Yes, I was unhinged.
Unhinged.
Yes, and went into a totally creative area of art making. Piano is interpretive. You read the notes of Beethoven, you put your hands on the piano, you make Beethoven happen.
Right.
So it's not creative in that you're not composing the music as you're doing it. You're playing already composed music. But when you're faced with a white canvas, you've got nothing to go by. Just a couple ideas. And you have to somehow make it happen and literally create a work of art, a two-dimensional representation in colors of what it is you think you've painted.
That's very cool. Did you ever do composing?
No. No. There are composing majors at my school that I went to, and their track is totally different from mine. My track involved 6 hours a day playing the piano. And that was not recital time. That was just daily, 6 hours a day at the piano in college. And the composition majors write. And they have styles courses, and they study different counterpoint things. And their track is just totally different. I mean, it's not like you could pick up a pen, sit me down, and say, Marianne, write me a symphony. I could, but it wouldn't be very good.
But you don't know because you never tried.
Right. Please don't do that to me today, Anne.
I just thought I'd ask, Marianne.
I might start with something other than a symphony now that I think of it.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I was just curious.
Takes too much paper to write a symphony. You got the violin one, violin two, violas, cellos, double bass. That's just your strings.
Right.
Then you got your woodwind group.
Yes.
And then you got your brass group.
And then you got drums.
And my favorite one, percussion. That's right.
Yes. Yep. Okay.
That's right.
All right. Well, you know, now that you have totally immersed yourself in art, I understand that you are just really loving the expressionism that you get and the ability of people to say, I got to have this.
Oh, those are the sweetest words for an artist to hear, is when somebody walks in, takes a look at your painting and says, I've got to have it. Just like that. And you're like, whoa. You know, I don't ask why.
Right.
I've learned not to ask why. Because it's a very personal thing. It's sort of like looking at a dress you want and you just want to have it.
Right.
You want it. You just want it. It's a covetous, you know, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods. The heck with that.
Yeah.
You're if you're shopping, you're coveting.
Right. That's what all the designers are hoping.
So I have trouble with that one commandment. Don't covet your neighbor's goods so that you steal from your neighbor. That's the way I was saying it.
Yes.
But I don't want you to get a lot of mail now on the Ten Commandments.
I hope not. But, when you were on a couple, 3 years ago, you were doing a lot of other stuff. Now it seems like you've kind of focused in on these spirit trees.
Yes, I was an artistic schizophrenic. I did trees, I did still life, I did flowers, I did my son's lute standing up against a pile of books, that was still life. I did miniatures, I did maxiatures, I did abstract, and really it's just within the past 2 years, just since I've been on the show. Maybe it was a moment for me, Anne. Maybe being
maybe
on
was.
Your show.
Maybe it was.
Because you ask such erudite questions of me, you force me to define just what the hell I do. I don't know if you can say that on the air, but
yeah,
I just
you
have.
Too. Yep. Okay.
Okay. All right.
It's all right.
But what were you talking about?
The spirit trees. Now you're basically into the trees. Now, how did you go from all these other items to focus in on trees?
Well, audience.
Audience.
Yeah. When I'm practicing the piano, I've got the audience in mind all the time. I want it to be easy to hear. I don't want it to be confusing. I want you to know when the loudest part is, so that you open your eyes and you go, wow, when I play that loudest part. Right. And then as I'm tapering away, I want you to be actually fading out with me.
Yes.
So it's the always the audience in mind. Now I'm painting, and it's the viewer in mind.
Right.
What is a viewer attracted to? So I go into museums, and I studied. I went to the Art Institute in Chicago and saw the Picasso exhibit, which was a collection, the biggest collection of his works that I've ever seen in my life. And I would look at it and say, why? Why is this such great stuff? And then I would see within the Picasso exhibit where my eye went. And my eye invariably went to color. Although I love black and white, I really do. I love pen and ink. I love all that stuff. But my eye went to color. And I thought, this is what I need to do. So just from analysis. And then people respond to color. So I'm figuring if I responded to it, then when you look at it, you're going to see the colors. I've had people that, a friend of mine bought a painting at the Flower Festival, where I always have a booth. And she said, I bought one of your paintings. And I said, I know. How is it? She says, I love it. It's in my bathroom. And I thought, well, okay. You know, but the colors were just so right. She bought it for the colors.
Sure.
And so I've also had a commission from a person, another good friend. All my commissions turn into good friends. Maybe I'm like the Donald, you know, he knows everybody, including Putin. Right. But this woman is a good friend now. She gives my dogs toys. Mm-hmm. So
good friends when they give your dog toys. Yes.
Yes.
Gracie has I have some of those type of friends that give Gracie nice toys.
Isn't that nice?
It is nice. Yes.
Well, I'll say your name, Peggy. Peggy asked me to do a painting for her guest room where the grandchildren stay. And I did one based on one that she was looking at when we were talking about this as a for example. And then I painted it for her, and she said, it's too dark. She took it home. She put it up. Mm-hmm. She brought it to me and said she wanted it to have a gold frame. She wanted it to be about 20 by 24. She wanted it to be like this painting. And she found a painting in my studio that she responded to. She said, like this painting. It didn't look anything like a spirit tree, but she was responding to the colors in that tree. So I just went back to the easel, took up the colors, took out my sponge, took out my scrubber, and I popped at that painting until I had infused it with color. And she was absolutely delighted.
That's a good feeling, isn't it? When you can make that connection.
When you can fill the bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a certain series of steps you need to go through to fill that bill. You're analyzing what the viewer is going to use it for. In other words, is this going to be a single piece that goes on the wall over the fireplace? Or is this the only work that's going to hang in the dining room? Or is this for a bedroom? And I've even gone so far as to, for certain collectors, to go to their house, deliver the painting, and then hang it for them.
Sure.
And
that's nice that you're able to have that personal relationship too.
Oh, I enjoy that more than anything else. That's the frosting on the cake, so to speak, is getting to know collectors and fulfilling their wishes. They're the consumer.
And as you're baking this cake.
Yes,
you are fulfilling yourself because you're doing something that you love.
That's true. I'm having fun doing it.
Yes.
When I'm not painting, I'm looking at pictures. When I'm not painting, I'm reading books on painting.
You are an obsessive person, aren't you?
Pretty much.
I've known you for many, many years.
I went from schizophrenic to OCD in a big hurry there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there a psychiatrist out there can help us come down here and help me with these terms? Wait a minute. Can you have be schizophrenic and have OCD at the same time?
Oh, my God. That sounds complicated.
Because I think that's what you said I have.
But do you think it is because that you were raised with the piano and the 6 hours every day practicing, do you think that's what has made you so obsessive about doing the art? Or if you're not painting, you're looking at art, you're doing this?
Even when I was doing the 6 hours a day, I always liked art. Mm-hmm. I always responded. I'd look at a TV show like General Hospital. You're listening to whether Dr. Smith is going to get Dr. Brenda into bed or not. Right. I'm looking to see what the art is on the wall in the bedroom. I'm going, oh, that's a neat idea for a painting. So
yes, you're obsessed. But okay.
Well, when I'm on track for something, I pretty much give it my all.
Well, that's kind of it's really kind of a single focus, isn't it? You had mm-hmm. to have the single focus when you played the piano.
Yes.
I mean, you were very single focus. Type of thing is what I'm...
They call it a discipline.
Yeah.
Art is a discipline. Music is another discipline.
You don't take this casually.
So is winning an Olympic gold medal.
Yeah.
There's a discipline around it, and you have to go through all the steps to get there. And you need to know how to mix your colors. You need to know what paintbrush to use for what effect you're going to use. You know when to grab the pot scrubber. Mm-hmm. You know, or to find something else that works just as well. So you're looking for effect, but effect to please the viewer's eye.
The end user. The end user.
Exactly. Yes. Because I want you to have the ah experience. I want you when we're through with the painting and the hanging, when it's there in your room and you go past it, you say, ah. I have one collector who has it in her bedroom and she's given it a gender.
A gender?
Yes. My painting is a she. She greets me every morning. That's the painting where the cotton candy grows. Is the name of that painting.
Okay.
And she is not a child. This woman is grown and has grandchildren of her own. This is not for a child. It speaks to her and starts her day off right. When she wakes up and sees...
That has to give you an awesome feeling to know that you have created something that gives somebody else a way to start their day every day in a good way.
And that's right. And they... I'll go for the any way I can get it.
Right.
And if I haven't quite met the ah, tell me about it and I'll fix it so you do go ah. So I work with my collectors.
That's terrific. Now, how many paintings have you actually, do you think you've sold? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. 100?
100?
Yeah, totally. Just kind of figuring out how many for Flower Festival and how many for that festival. I don't know if you're including minis. Maybe it's 150. Hmm. So, yeah, I've moved about that many of them. Got them ready there. And my studio and the art center is full of them. Just stacked up.
Now, Tony plays a role in this.
Yes, he does.
He's no longer across the piano from you here. But what does Tony do, your husband?
He frames.
He's a framer.
He picks out frames for various paintings. And then he puts them in the frames. And when I'm stuck on something, and every single discipline in the world, I don't care whether you're running a jewelry store or whether you're an artist or whether you're a pianist, goes through every single work goes through the ugly duckling phase.
It's true.
There's an ugly duckling period when it just ain't right.
Correct.
And at that point, you want to know what to do to make it right. And you'll do anything to make it right.
Right,
I'm not going to suggest infusing your system with chemicals, but I know people that have gone that route.
Okay.
To get it right.
So what do you do, Maria?
I go to Tony I say, Tony, this is bothering me. This is just bothering me. I don't know what's wrong with it. And he'll say, well, think about that one that you did for XYZ. And I say, okay. He said, that one had the colors that you're working with there, but you need a little more texture in this painting. There's not enough texture on the canvas. So he knows enough mm-hmm. from following me around, and we do galleries together. He's the only person that will go in a gallery with me. Wow. Nobody else wants to go with me because I take forever. I get stuck in front of one painting. Like there's the Klimt trees. Mm-hmm. And Gustav Klimt just had a movie made about him and a painting that he did for an Austrian Jewish woman. And it's the tale of the placement of this painting in the right place. So Gustav Klimt has been on everybody's radar. Well, they brought out at the Museum of Modern Art, they put up a few of his trees. And Gustav Klimt is known more for the kiss and sort of almost erotic figures. And he had a little problem showing some of his work because of that. But I just want to look at his trees. I'm a good Christian woman. And so,
were his trees erotic? I just need to know before we get any further. Well, there's this story.
The tree that I'm thinking of that I saw had two figures in it, and there's no telling what those two people had in mind. Maybe to do under the tree. I don't know.
Okay,
depends on your imagination. But I took pictures of it. I took pictures of it up close. I took pictures of it far back, and I just studied to see what size brush he used for the strokes. What colors he tended to use, which were blues and greens and violets, which is all on the cool side of the color wheel. Mm-hmm. And those three colors play together very nicely. And so I watched to see where his dark spaces were, what the values were, what was dark, what was light. And it took me, then you look at the background, then you look at the foreground, then you look at the texture, then you look at the, and to do each one of these layers of evaluation takes you some time. So that's what I did.
Yeah.
My kids won't stand around for me to do all that.
Right.
They're like ready to go to the next gallery. Thank you, just the same.
Right. They've seen it. Good. Let's go.
Yeah, there's a tree. Nice, Mom. Let's be out of here.
You know, one of the things we're going to talk about when we come back, we're going to take a little break here. When we come back is, Marianne, you basically have taught yourself. Skip kind of gave you some direction, and then from that you have been self-taught.
I'm a self-taught artist in that I've never been to a university to study art. I don't have a degree in it, and I have lots of degrees in music, so I know how deep you can go.
Right, exactly.
And all the work I've done in art, I've done of my own volition without a teacher pointing at me and telling me to go to a museum or anything like that.
Well, that's what I was thinking when you were just telling us about that. That's getting pretty deep there. That's not just looking at it and saying, nice tree, can we move on now?
Oh, let's move on.
Yeah, all right. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment. Andy, let's play some words from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, this afternoon. My very special guest, somebody that I have been remiss in having back on the show. She does so many wonderful things, and she has just blossomed in her art. How about that? And these spirit trees are just phenomenal. But before we get into talking about some of the tips and things that you can give people on art, and we talk more about spirit trees, I would love to hear a little bit about your trip to Russia.
Ah, okay. Well, I'm on a river kick.
A river kick.
And when I was in the sixth grade in Miss Cipolla's sixth grade geography class.
Yes.
Cipolla is actually Cipolla. It's an Italian name. It means onion, but that's neither here nor there. In her class, we studied the geography of the world based on the rivers, what cities were on the river, where the river emptied into the sea. And so I became cognizant of the fact that many good things happen along the rivers. They're some of the most fascinating cities, because this was a major mode of transportation then. They didn't have an interstate.
Correct.
Back when. So I've been down the Amazon River now. I've been down the Yangtze River, been down the Danube River, been down the Thames River. And I wanted to do the Volga. And so we went to Russia and went to Moscow. First we went to St. Petersburg. St. Petersburg was, I was in heaven, because they have the biggest art gallery in the world in the Hermitage.
Mm-hmm.
and the just being in that museum, there's just so much there that they have, and seeing these works that you've read about and you've seen them in the books, you know, in various kinds of reproductions in books, and now you're looking at it and you're seeing Matisse the way he painted something for the inside of somebody's house, and they've taken the whole wall and they've put it up there. You know, it's just being right next to it. I was excited when we went to Vienna once because I got to go into Mozart's house, and I could see the symphonies that he wrote for Haydn with his inscription on it. And I mean, I'd read about this, I'd written papers on it and all that kind of stuff, but to see it in the flesh was great. Well, that's how I felt in the Hermitage. Then there was a...
You said they even have, they suck the oxygen out of the rooms and out of the vaults.
That's the storage. There's a storage facility for the Hermitage. It's a state-of-the-art concrete building. It's about 5 stories tall. Every room is sealed like a vault. It looks like you're going in a submarine. They are always turning those big wheels. You know, I've seen submarine movies, and you're almost expecting to hear beep, 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 beep. But everything's sealed, and it's sealed and it's arranged according to the age of the paintings. They're not hung on walls. They're hung on display racks that they stack up like books on a shelf. So you've got to pull them out. The guide has to pull them. If you touch them, they're going to probably shoot you with a large gun. But he pulls them out so that you can see the storage of how many paintings there are. For the fire system, the fire prevention system, they have these fans that suck all of the oxygen out of the air.
So it won't burn.
So there's no combustion. Yeah, that's right.
How about that?
And it's so modern. It's just so modern. You think of Hermitage as, well, it's an old castle.
Yeah,
it's an old castle. But the storage facility is strictly 21st century. But seeing all that art, it's sort of like, oh, I don't know. It's like being young and jumping into the McDonald's thing of balls, the great big container of balls. You know, you're immersed in it. There's balls all around you. You want balls, kid? I'll give you balls. You want art, kid? Go to the Hermitage. Yeah, go to the Hermitage. It's just spectacular how much you see. And, you know, you wonder, how much more can I see of this?
Right.
And so I would go back in a skinny minute to give it a second try. To do it in one go round is really not doing it justice.
Would you go back maybe just to go to the Hermitage?
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
I would go tomorrow.
Okay, yes. Tony, if you're listening. Okay.
Tony.
Yeah.
We need another trip to St. Petersburg. No, not the Florida one.
Yeah, there you go. To Russia
the
with
other
love.
One. The other one.
To Russia with love. There you go. That's so wild.
Oh yeah. It's like being a kid in a shop full of sundaes and ice cream and just more than you want, more than you could think of, things that you want, plenty of chocolate, plenty of strawberry, but then some salty caramel and then some rocky road and then some moose tracks.
How long did you get to spend there, Marianne?
2 days.
2 days?
2 days.
Well, that's pretty good. I mean,
that's pretty good.
But you could probably spend a week.
A month.
Yeah.
A month.
Yeah. Probably have to get a special visa for that.
I guess so. And seeing as I don't have any degrees in art, I'm not sure I could get one.
Now, just out of curiosity, and we're going to move on. Do they bring groups in? Do they have it open? I mean, I have no idea. Is it open for the public?
Yes, it's open like a regular museum, like Versailles is open.
Okay.
You stand in line, you buy your ticket, you go through it.
Right.
We went through as a group with a river cruise, and then there is an optional tour that was to see the Hermitage storage facility. Okay. And yes, you go in with a guide, and they lead you through it to do each room that has something important.
Sure.
I departed, I knew what was in there because I'd done my homework, and I departed from the group where I wanted to. I had no interest in seeing more portraits of great counts and kings and czars and the czarina and the czarina's second nephew three times removed. So that's when I went off to see the modern stuff.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Well, Marianne, I didn't know about the Russia trip. That is awesome. But, you know, one of the things that you are...
I met Putin.
You met Putin?
He's a good friend.
Good
friend?
Yes.
Oh, we're really good friends.
Did you have any vodka?
Yes, we did. We had vodka. Actually, we did. Me and Putin. We tossed back a few.
Okay, and then you tossed the glass over your shoulder afterwards?
Yes, just like in Indiana Jones. Yes.
Okay, excellent.
I'm mixing metaphors here.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, we have the idea of what went on now. Did you promise him one of your spirit trees?
Did I promise? We didn't have time. He had another meeting. Yeah.
Okay. All right. But next time, maybe you could set up a longer visit and spend some time with Putin.
I'm hoping to explain the United States Constitution to him sometime.
Okay. And maybe explain a few other things to him about America here.
things that we really don't understand anymore.
That's right.
I used to think I knew how government worked. No more.
No more.
No.
That's right. It's all upside down, folks. But that's a conversation for another day. Now, but you have decided that you are going to be able to do more teaching. You're going back to some teaching. You've come up with some ideas. What is this about ovaries?
Ovaries.
Yes.
It's spelled O-V-E-R-I-E-S.
Okay.
So, but they're all points of the creation of art where you make one choice over another. When you're sitting there with the white canvas in front of you, mm-hmm. it's intimidating. What can you do? You can do anything. Which brush can you use? You can use any brush. Which color should you use? Sky's the limit. Here's your palette. Just go and buy the paint, squeeze a little out. But you need to make choices. For example, you've got a row of trees. Now, should you put the row of trees in a straight line, or should you stagger them so that they're haphazard? Mm-hmm. And the answer is haphazard.
Okay.
So between one and two, neat row, haphazard,
okay.
You pick haphazard. Another one is we have edges in paintings.
Right.
You can see a clear edge here where the grass touches the background, the sky.
Mm-hmm.
Here, where one color goes into the next in the sky, you see no edge. Your eye just takes it in. That's called a soft edge. Blurry. Take off your glasses, you can do the same thing.
Okay.
Okay? Blurry. You'd be surprised how many people use nothing but blurry. Soft edges. 90% of what you paint should have soft edges in it. If it's all...
Why 90%?
It's a random number.
Okay.
And it's a random number got by just examining portraits of great artists, examining sunsets, skies, horizons, sky treatment, grass treatment, how they make it read right, how you can look at a painting and know, oh, that's good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They use these... Well, and in viewing them, just we'll stick with the 90%. I was at the Metropolitan Museum in New York just recently.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a odalisk, which is a Zoptic babe reclining on a bunch of pillows with a servant standing by to serve her. It's a very famous work. I won't get into who painted it. But you look at it from across the room and you just go, oh my gosh, is that gorgeous. If you go up real close, the edge where her skin meets the dark velvet that's draped behind her is a soft edge. It's not a hard edge. It's not crystal clear. It's a little less, it's blurry. It's nicely blurry.
You've had to train yourself.
Oh,
to see
Oh my
this.
Gosh!
Yes,
yes. I right. did nothing but hard edges for the longest time. But that's another. That's just another way of viewing it. There's also in shadows and things like that. Just being able to decide that you're going to use purple for shadows.
Mm-hmm.
When you look, I see colors in things that nobody else sees colors in. I can look at a tree and see purple shade where you don't see any purple, but
right.
I've now trained my eye. As a musician, I had to train my ear
right.
so that if we turned down another station now with music on it
mm-hmm.
and you heard a song you like, like, I don't know, hound dog or something. I'm looking at a picture of a hound dog. And you hand me a piece of paper with five lines on it, I can write you out the tune. I can just
can
do
hear it. Yes.
I know how to do it. I've been trained to write out music on command.
Right.
Whatever I hear, I can write. It's no big deal if
just
you're going
like
to a
music
school.
Just like writing English words.
Yes, it'd be yes. like dictation. And it's, right. it's musical dictation, so you write that way. In art, you duplicate what the masters do. And that's been, as a self-taught artist, that's been something I've worked very hard at. I had to kind of tell myself, Marianne, you already got a doctorate in music. You don't want to get a doctorate in art. You want this to be an avocation, and you want it to be enjoyable, and you don't want the pressure of...
You want it to be fun.
You want it to be fun. Yes, you don't want to. You really don't want to write a dissertation on anything. You just want to take it in. And
your affirmation is when people buy from you and say, "I gotta have it."
And that's when the "I gotta have it" happens. It's because things have come together in a good way. You might not even be able to explain all that you've done. Sometimes I see paintings I finished 2-3 years ago, and I go, "Wow, that's pretty good." Wow, yeah. I did that? Yeah.
That's a good feeling.
It really is.
Good feeling.
Yes, I tend to be self-critical. So I'm critiquing as I'm going. And when all the critiquing is done, it takes another step to stand back and go, okay, what you got now?
Well, you know, I'm curious how you got into the spirit. I mean, just the tree aspect. We kind of touched, I mean, you were looking at trees, but now you actually are developing a trademark registration at the patent office for spirit trees.
For spirit trees.
Yes.
They popped into my head. I was looking for ideas to paint, and I was on Pinterest, of all places, just looking at pictures, looking and saying, how about this? How about that? You like that one? Yeah, that looks good. Oh, this is a good one. You know how you look on Pinterest.
Right.
And I noticed that most of the pins were trees. And I thought, gee, you really enjoy doing trees. If there's one thing that you really do well at, it's trees. There's something about putting in the trunk, making sure it sits comfortably in the soil, starting with the limbs that go off to the side in a 90-degree angle at the bottom and increase to about a 176-degree angle at the top of the crown. There's just something about the geometry of the tree that I find inherently relaxing. I love to look at trees.
I do too. Out of my window. Yeah.
There's something geometrically pleasant about it. Color-wise, it's got a lot of variation in it.
And it changes.
And it moves.
And it changes.
Yes, it changes. And it moves. It's going through transition. No matter when you look at a tree, it's about to do something.
This is true.
If it's in winter and the buds are on it, they're getting ready to put out leaves. And there's little swollen places along the branches where
exactly.
you can. Yeah. And then when their flowers come out, they start to fade, and they're now going to have leaves, green stuff. And it's going to come out in a sort of a gentle yellow-green color at the beginning. So springtime trees have a totally different look from middle of summertime trees, which
exactly.
are a deep, deep, and that's when you get into your purple shadows. And that's, I think, Klimt's choice of the season when he's doing his trees. He usually has them full-fruited. He has an apple tree with a lot of different apples on it. I'm not going to do it justice if I describe it. But, they're in transition, and they're every day they're taking in carbon dioxide, putting out oxygen.
So necessary for you and me.
They put out stuff. And there's a sort of an energy to the tree.
You know, I think the thing that bothers me is whenever I see a tree that's been taken down or a tree that's been damaged. We were talking about before the show about that tree up there on 25 that got hit by lightning.
Yeah.
And I always hate it when I hear about a redwood that's going to have to come down
something.
I mean, I just feel like it is a death, and it is phenomenal.
I try not to think about the wildfires. If I had to see that, I think I'd be a different person. It's the desolation of it. and the destruction of what California is going through just boggled the mind. Not to mention the people's houses going up.
We lived in Florida when the wildfire went through Interstate 4. Mm-hmm. And you'd be driving down that, and you would have driven down it 100 times and seen all the luscious forage and the forest and the trees and everything. Mm-hmm. And when you drove down it after that, it was like how the moon.
It was like being on a planet with no life.
With no life, yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very sad. I mean, you really felt it. That's why I'm so interested about your spirit trees and the reaction that people have had to your spirit trees. And now that you're getting a patent for it, I would find it difficult. How can you get, you're getting a patent on the words?
Just on the words spirit trees.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because there are spirit trees that we were talking about where people carve
tree spirits. Tours. That's usually called a tree spirit. The little, if you're a woodworker, and there's a wonderful woodworking guild in Greenwood. They just do spectacular stuff. They go in the, and I see Ray Sparrow a lot. Mm-hmm. He's got a studio down the way from mine at the Art Center. And he will come in with some chunk of wood. It's maybe a branch, maybe a root, but it's gnarly. It's just plain gnarly, and he's going to take it and release the tree shape into a creation of his. Might be a dog, it might be a snake, it might be dog, snake. He might be a face. He sees human faces in them, and those are tree spirits. That's they're usually called tree spirits.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, but the fascination with the trees, and you were telling me how you actually take different types of a pot scrubber sometimes and use that to give it effect, and you use all these different types of apparati. It's not just the paintbrush.
No, it's when you get to the leaves on the tree, out your window, look at a tree, and you'll see the green part, which are the leaves. There's a texture to it. You can't paint it flat. You can't just take a brush, dip it in the green paint, and do a nice blob of green at the end of the branch, which is brown. Trees are brown, grass is green. Leaves are green. Little red house has a little red roof. You know, those, those, by the way, are called Tarzan labels.
Tarzan labels?
Yeah, the ones that you, where you're not painting what you're seeing, you're just painting what you have been told.
Right.
What color is grass? Green. Well, not always.
Right. There's so many shades to
there's
it,
so many, and in the fall it's a different shade. Yeah, and there are a lot of different shades to grass. So if you're painting it really the way it looks, it gets a little more complicated. But I'm going for texture in the leaves so that you can see through it. I want it to be translucent. I don't want your eye to get stopped by the thing of leaves. I want one leaf group to just flow into the next and to create a unity so that it all belongs together, it all hangs together, but avoiding a sense of mass, of cluster, of heaviness, because leaves are not heavy. They're just the right amount of heaviness for that particular tree at that particular time of that particular shape, because this tree that I'm looking at might not be the one that grew up all by itself, like that one you were referring to on Highway 25. This tree may have had an annoying older brother that was growing into his space.
Right.
And so he had to go whoop a little bit to the left and whoop a little bit to the right not to touch the brother, because they're competing for the same sunlight and water.
Right.
So sometimes trees take on in really interesting shapes, really dynamic shapes.
You know, one of the ways that I love seeing trees naked.
You're naked when you look at them,
no,
or you like them naked?
I like them naked. So you can't see the leaves, you see the shapes and everything. I love the shape of the tree. And, you know, I think that's one of the things that's so interesting about your spirit trees, because in a lot of trees, you don't get to really see the branches and everything, whereas in your spirit trees, you do see the branches.
That's correct, yes. I start off with a sketch of the trunk and the branch formation, and I try to make sure that every branch becomes a little bit thinner as it goes along, because trees always are thicker at the middle and then get thinner toward the end. So if you have all one thickness of a branch going out to the very end, you've screwed up. Just take another piece of, take some white paint, cover that up, let it dry, and do it again so that it becomes thinner as you go along.
That is one of the neat things about art, isn't it? If you don't like what you have, you can just paint over it and keep going.
That's one reason that I like acrylic. Is because I can do that. I'm not a patient person, Anne.
You're not.
I'm not a patient person. No,
really?
I like the things.
I created jewelry for you. I know that.
I'm just that patience is not my thing. I don't know how I raised my children, but it wasn't with a lot of patience.
But when you're working with acrylics, you're able to.
When I'm working with acrylics and I don't like something, something bothers me, I can immediately reshape it. By simply painting, for example, I don't like the way I've got a tree and it's against the sky. All right, you got the sky on top, you got the tree down below. And the sky shows through the tree. So I've screwed up a branch and it's too thin too fast. Mm-hmm. It's just a ridiculous skinny branch that doesn't belong there, or a too fat branch that doesn't belong there. I repaint the sky. And I take out that branch and I redo it again. When that sky has dried, I will repaint the branch again. And you can do that over and over until you get it just right. And that's where the OCD comes in, because you want it to be just right. I've framed things. Tony's framed them. They're hanging up at my studio. It's a spirit tree. There have been several sold just like it. I see something that bothers me. In the frame, I will take the tree down. I will put it back on the easel, and I have to fix it. I have to fix it. I just make sure I don't get any paint on the frame.
Correct.
So the process of painting for me is not a close-ended deal. Okay. I have to call it finished at one time or another. Otherwise, I don't sell any, and I don't go on to the next painting, which is the whole circle of the painter's life. It's to create the painting for someone to look at, for someone to take that painting away, in which case you've got...
You can't do anything more to it, Marianne.
You can't do anything more to it. They take it away, and you are faced with another piece of canvas, which means creation all over again. And it's that cycle that I find most fulfilling. Most fulfilling.
Now, out of curiosity, I mean, you've painted a lot of spirit trees.
Yes, I have.
Okay. What's next? Are you going to continue spirit trees?
I'm going to continue along with trees in one way or another as a sort of an exercise for myself. How many different ways can you paint a tree? My next project has, I've done sketches for these, has the tree and the ground and a dark background and a single woman in a long dress, just standing with her head down underneath the tree. So we can add figures to the tree.
So it's going to expand.
Expand, and also trees in groups. A copse of trees, if you will.
A copse of trees.
Yes,
You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. So you see trees are always going to be in your future, you think?
Yeah, I just love them. Matter of fact, where we live, I'm on the committee to make sure nobody takes down extra trees. Which, you know, with the whole group of us in that committee is called tree huggers. But that doesn't bother me whatsoever. I don't really hug them. I just enjoy looking at them.
You know, I'm trying to think of the movie where it was a modern movie. It was a very famous movie, and the name escapes me with the little trolls. No, they weren't trolls.
The garden gnomes?
Not the garden, but what I'm thinking about is the trees that came to life, and the trees walked, and it was so fantastic, you know, and then when somebody came, they just stopped in their shape, you know, kind of like the game you used to play as a child, you know, and then you had to stop.
Then you had to freeze.
And you had to freeze,
right.
But the trees were in the forest, and it was so great. Mr. Benegit, what's the name of that movie? Somebody tell me the name of that movie. I can't stand it. I slept through part of the movie, but I saw the part about the trees. What's
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
Did you ever see Lord of the Rings?
Yes, I did. Yes,
did
I did.
See with the trees we're walking?
Yes, where
Wasn't
they're
that fantastic?
They're, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes.
And another thing that some people have said, my paintings remind them of the trees in, is it Avatar? The movie,
oh, right? Yes,
with the fanciful forests,
yes,
with the wild colors. A lot of the color theory that I've developed has come from good animation. You can learn a lot from Disney, from looking at what they call a gradient plane. Mm-hmm. So they you see Disney, you got a blue sky. Okay, so blue sky, but it's not really all blue. It's a graded blue, and it goes from a kind of a cool blue over here to a sort of a little warmer blue, little darker blue. It always changes, and that's what you should do. Every time you take your brush and you dip it in to get more paint, it should be a slightly different color.
So that the thing... That's what's so amazing when you go to the Venetian in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
And the sky is just fantastic because it is just like what... The sky, but it's not all the same. It's very, very
gradient planes. Yeah,
gradient planes. I have now been educated here this afternoon.
And you can learn a lot. I mean, looking back at Avatar, I look at the stills from it. I've studied them.
Yeah,
I studied with a woman named Susan Sarback in California, and I took 2 weeks of workshop. She's an oil painter, and she actually had the Disney crew come in to study color theory with her.
How about that?
So they farm out their illustrators, and that's commercial art. It's graphic art, it's commercial art. There's a lot to be learned from commercial art. A lot to be learned. And also from the masters.
Yeah. That's cool. Well, what have you got planned? I understand you're going to be doing some teaching.
I'm going to be doing some lectures.
Lectures, okay.
And some lectures, and date to be announced, but it's going to be this season at the MAC in McCormick. I don't know if you know this, but Tony and I were at the opening of the MAC when Governor Riley was there to cut the ribbon. Yes, we played piano duet music for them. And Patty Jennings was the director of it and started it. She used to be my piano student.
How about that?
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So I've always had a soft spot in my heart for the MAC. And we're going to do a series of lectures, and it's for the self-taught artist. So if you're trying to get yourself on the ladder of success with painting on your own, these are certain steps to take. One is the 20 ovaries, and the next one is the I can't say it. Oh, give me another try here. Artpreneur. We have artpreneur. That's right, because once you've got your paintings painted, you have to find a way to get them to the viewer.
Exactly.
You know, in music, we charge money, and you come in a great big auditorium, and you sit down, and we present our stuff. Mm-hmm. We play our stuff. With art, it's a little bit different. You can have shows, but how do you get a show?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
I want you to look at my... I had a friend that I used to paint with in my studio. She would be out for dinner or lunch with a bunch of her girlfriends. She had all her latest art in her trunk. And she would get everybody outside, and we all be standing around looking in her trunk at her latest watercolors.
That was an impromptu show.
Impromptu show.
Yes.
But there's a need to get it. And so this is just the science of getting your work before the public in a decent way, in a logical way, and in a way that helps you build your self. Your sense of self as an artist, because that's one thing you really need. You've got to find and define your own style at a certain point.
And you've got to find people that like your style.
Right.
That's
right.
Kind of a challenge sometimes, too.
Especially if you don't know what your style is yet.
Right.
But I have several little shortcuts to getting your work
developed.
Up that I've developed. That's right. And over years of just trial and error. And I've done plenty of trial and error. That's the whole story of my life is trial and error. So you try to get through the, try to get away from the error stuff and learn something from it all the time.
I think we should call it trial and success.
Yes, that would be good.
I mean, that's much more like what you have had, Marianne. Trial and success, because you are a student first. Whatever you do, you approach things as a student.
You're absolutely, that's a good observation, and you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I study.
Yeah, you do, and that's why you're able to have success, and you're able to see these things, because you have done that lecture teaching this type of thing. It's awesome.
And the third lecture will be, I'm being framed.
You're being framed?
I'm being framed.
No doubt about it.
By some people I know and trust, probably. But the whole notion of putting a frame around a painting.
And to enhance it and not take away from it. Because so many times people say, oh, a big, beautiful frame will enhance it. Well, not necessarily.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so there's considerations to be made, including one that I find very helpful, and that is to imagine the frame in your mind as you're painting the painting. You don't wait till the last moment mm-hmm. when you finally put M. Lenti at the bottom and say, oh my God, I've got to frame the thing. No, you've already thought about it. Matter of fact, I think about where to put the M. Lenti and in what color I'm going to sign. Everything is planned out.
And of course, Tony does the majority of your framing.
Yes, I'm not going to put it in the frame.
Right.
I have someone to do that for me.
Well, that's very fortunate. Do you already say, this is the type of frame I want? Or does he look at it and say, Marianne, I think this is what this painting needs?
That marriage would not last long at all. That would be a death knell for the relationship. No, he has come.
I'm sure he'd like to do that, Marianne.
He would. He does like to take over. You're absolutely right. But he takes over in a very good way. He knows my colors. They're warm colors. Mm-hmm. Invariably, they go better with a gold accent. Mm-hmm. Now, what color the wood should be beyond that, or how thick it should be, that's trial and success. New method of learning, trial and finding success.
Yes.
That's a decision that you make, but you should be, for example, we're looking at one here, you should know about how thick you want that frame to be. As you're painting it, as you're looking at it, you're going to lose about a quarter of an inch all the way around, for starters, so you never put anything really important on the extreme edge of your painting, ever.
Right.
It's called a no-fly zone. Put anything there. It's not going to be seen. What's the point?
Exactly.
So you're going to lose your quarter inch all the way around, and you should be thinking about that as you're painting it. It's not something to be left off for the last minute. Matter of fact, that quarter inch should be in your initial sketches. When you're laying out for how big should this thing be? Do I want it to go off the edge? Do I want it to be within the rectangle that I'm using here? Or do I want it to look like it's stretching beyond the rectangle out into space?
Now that brings me to another point. Do you sketch before you paint?
Yes.
So you don't just sit down and go, I'm going to create this?
No, it's not organization at all. No, I'm not organized. I absolutely... No,
well,
you're
I
really
you're
barking up the wrong spirit tree
well,
there.
Well, but if you are, you don't just sit down and paint.
No, I start with a pencil.
Okay.
I start with a pencil and a drawing in which I try to map out what's called values. Where are my light parts going to be and where is my dark parts going to be? Just very, very basic. And then what shape do I want it to be in? Am I going to hold the canvas side to side, which is called landscape view, or am I going to hold the canvas up and down, which is called the portrait view?
Anybody that's used a printer understands that.
Yeah, I guess
yeah,
so.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
The
yeah,
same,
yeah.
same
concept.
Difference.
Yeah.
Same thing. Same yeah. thing. Yeah. Very basic. So yeah, you have to make a lot of decisions going in. And the sooner you make those decisions, the more relaxed you are. When those little details are taken care of, that's when the artistry can happen. And you're not frustrated by bumping up against your own concept. You want to make your decisions ahead of time. And
what if you don't have any decisions that you know to make?
Look at pictures.
Look at pictures.
Look at pictures. Find pictures you like. Do it that way.
Very interesting. Well, Mary Ann Lenti, this has been awesome to sit down here and just chat about
pictures.
Yes.
Thank you.
You've come a long way, baby.
Yeah, I guess I have.
You have, absolutely.
I just keep chugging away.
What is that? Trial and success.
Trial and success, yes.
The story of Mary Ann Lenti.
Eventually the success comes. Trial and success. You spend as little time in... Oh, no, you don't do trial and error. You know, error is something you eschew.
Right, exactly. So why do we call it trial and error? Why don't we call it trial and success?
Trial and... You've coined a new phrase for the idiomatic dictionary of
there
America.
There you go. I'll have to turn that one in. Thank you very much.
might want to put a patent on it.
Might want to put a patent on it.
Trademark it.
There you go. Well, Mary Ann Lenti, what's next for you? Are you going to be up there this week at the Uptown Market?
I'm going to be at the Uptown Market on the first Wednesday of every month, as usual. So I've already done my August show, and I set up a little table, and I sell miniatures. I found out, if anybody's been at the Uptown Market, it's just fabulous. It's very comfortable, because there's a beautiful wind that comes right through there. Unfortunately, that wind has knocked over my large easels. And if you have a big painting that you have on an easel and the wind knocks it over, I mean, it treats it just like a sail on a sailboat. Kaboom.
Right.
I used duct tape the last time to hold the paintings into the... I mean, I've literally stretched
it's
duct tape.
It's a good tape. Wind. It's a good wind.
It takes a little bit away from the painting to see it held in place with duct tape. But heck.
It works.
I don't use large paintings anymore. They work too much like sailboats. So I just do miniatures at the market, and I found them very successful.
Now, somebody wants to talk to you about a commission. You'll do this type of thing?
Yes, I will do this type of thing.
And
but
how do they get in touch with you?
They can get in touch with me at the Art Center, where I have my studio. I've got a cell phone. It's on my business cards. You want me to tell everybody
sure,
what
ahead,
it is?
Sure, go ahead. Tell them what your cell phone
993, and I found the...
Okay.
2294.
Okay.
That's my cell phone.
And people can call you and say they'd like to talk to you down at your studio if they have an idea?
Yes. Matter of fact, I had a woman down come to my studio, and we were talking about vodka earlier. She likes vodka. Okay, so what, Marianne? You got a friend that likes vodka. So big deal. Well, she saves the bottles. And she wanted to commission me to do a spirit tree.
On a bottle.
On a bottle, because she's going to use the bottle upside down to water her plants. It's a frosted glass. It's absolutely a wonderful shaped bottle. But she has a lot of fun prepping these bottles for paintings because she drinks all the vodka.
It's a continuation.
She's very cheerful. Very cheerful person to be around.
Yes.
So I did that. I mean, there's a limit to what I will do. Someone else asked me if I would do an outside mural for a pool house. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, not in South Carolina. I don't think so. That takes a whole other group of paints.
Sure.
And there is a point. I'm not doing everything I get asked to do, but
sure.
I try to put my viewer first and try to come up with something that pleases them. Still going for the ah. I don't want any applause. I just want that ah.
You just want to know when you send that painting to its rightful owner that it creates that ah.
Oh, they've been sent all over the place. I occasionally post one on Facebook, and I've sent one to Albuquerque the other week. I've sent them to Florida. I've sent them to Chicago. Not to my son either. Other people in Chicago. Not family people.
You know, that's terrific. You know, I think it is terrific that you found another... You were so great at your music and the piano, and to find another level to go to reinvent yourself and find that new direction,
I think you're
to be commended.
That is very sweet of you, Anne. Thank you.
Well,
thank
it's
you.
True. It's true. All right. We're here with Mary Ann Lenti this afternoon. We've had a great conversation. You can see her at the Art Center. Now, do you hold any special type of hours that you work or anything? Or?
No. I just do it by appointment. Oh, another thing is I have a show coming up.
Okay.
And that's at the Mac. It's
in
Mac in December. So for the whole month of December, I'll have Spirit Trees Out the Wazoo, which is the name. No, it's not. Spirit Trees, I'm sure everybody's sick and tired of hearing about Spirit Trees. But it'll be all Spirit Trees, all different kinds of them. Mostly large ones at the Mac in December and McCormick.
That's sounds great. Well, thank you so much for coming and sharing with us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me. I've had a blast. I do self-critiques, and I have to define myself. It's quite an exercise, a mental exercise, being on with you, Anne.
Well, thank you very much, Marianne. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.